Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramley.
I'm Jenny Brentis.
And I'm Connor Orr.
And guys, we are through the Week 6 Sunday slate here, and we had a day of some blowouts, some games that were not particularly close, not particularly interesting, and that's just the way it goes sometimes. But we had a couple of overtime games. We had a couple of absolute thrillers here. So while we normally start with Sunday night, we're going to hold off on that one for a little bit, and we are going to start with what ended up being, you know, it was kind of a slow-paced situational football battle here in Foxborough, but it ends up being one of the most thrilling games I can remember seeing in the regular season. So let's start off with that one.
Cowboys, Patriots.
All right, so I was jotting down notes for this game as it was sort of, it was midway through the fourth quarter, kind of wrapping up, and I'd written down like, oh, what a Bill Belichick type of win, sort of outmanned here, but they win through situational football, third down defense, they get a takeaway in the red zone, just a real classic, Patriots sort of overachieving type of victory, and then everything just went completely haywire in the last 3 minutes of regulation and overtime here.
Yeah, it was a crazy finish to the game, particularly the sequence in which Trevon Diggs gets the interception, returns it for a touchdown, and then Mac Jones turns around and throws a 75-yard touchdown pass. It was a wild swing of events. Obviously, for the Cowboys, it was a really big win to be able to go into Foxborough, even if it's a diminished version of the Patriots, and extend their winning streak. But I also thought it was a good game for the Patriots, and that sequence we just described showed exactly what you want in a quarterback. For a rookie quarterback like Jones to be able to make that kind of turnaround and to throw a touchdown pass, to not be scared to throw in that situation. Clearly, there were some coverage issues on that play by the Cowboys that allowed for the score to happen. But Jones showed confidence throughout the game, and I thought, this was yet another encouraging performance in a loss like the Bucs game was.
Yeah, it really should have been a win for the Patriots. And interestingly enough, like, Jones probably wouldn't have had to throw the football – at all for that first pick six had they not had that delay of game penalty before that that pushed them back to the second and 15 and forced the pass to begin with. And so, you know, while it was obviously like still technically a play that eventually cost them the game, I do think if you're the Patriots, you have to feel good about Mac Jones. Like, I think he was 5 of 6 on all passes beyond 10 yards. So he hit almost all of his deep shots. His average yards per attempt are going up every week over the last 3 weeks. And I think it was over 10 yards an attempt this week, which is like 3.5 yards better than his previous high. Like, all these are like non-rookie plotting things. Like, these are good, like average quarterback moving the ball kinds of things. And so I think you have to be happy if you're the Patriots. And in 2 out of the last 3 weeks, you hung with 2 of the best 3 teams in football. So, and with an undermanned roster, there's no other way to say it. And so I think you have to feel pretty good about it. And nobody's running away with the AFC East right now. So I don't know. I think not all is lost for this year, but certainly not in the grand scheme of things for the Patriots either.
I just love the psychology of going at Trevon Diggs with a double move right after what seemed like it was the game-winning pick six. I don't know who better to pick on at that point. Who's going to play with more just sort of brash overconfidence at that moment in their life than the guy who just basically won the game with it. So that was neat. As far as the Cowboys go, obviously Trevon Diggs made a great play on that pick six. Throws a little bit high and wide. He takes advantage and takes it back for the touchdown. But we've sort of talked about this a couple times this year where Dak Prescott has been excellent in the season. But he hasn't had to do a lot. I mean, and that's a good thing. That's good when Dak Prescott only throws the ball 25 times in a week and they win anyway. This was a game where they needed him to do more, and he did more, and he accomplished it. I mean, he ended up dropping back more than 50 times. He ends up throwing for 445, and of course that includes the game-winning deep ball to CeeDee Lamb there that ends up being the walk-off play. But that's kind of it. I mean, you know, they had to play from behind a little bit. They sort of kept on shooting themselves in the foot with penalties. You know, like I said, they had a fourth and goal on the goal line where Dak Prescott ends up fumbling it as he reaches over the goal line. They turn it over there. Just a lot went wrong in this game for Dallas, and yet they end up walking out of Foxborough with a win, and I think that's a really big deal.
Yeah, and notable, after the game, Dak Prescott told reporters that he has an injury to his right calf and that he could have continued in the game, but calf injuries can be a little bit tricky, so I think it'll be interesting to see the good timing for the Cowboys to have a bye week, so he has a little bit extra time to rest and recover. But just wanted to mention that going forward for Prescott. But you're right, Gary. This was a game where they had some mistakes. They had dug themselves into a little bit of a hole, and they needed a brilliant performance from their quarterback to pull them out of it. And I think he ended up throwing for 450-some yards. So again, that combined with the number of dropbacks, just a really productive performance for him.
It must be incredibly frustrating if you're Dak Prescott that I do think a lot of the conversation is going to center around Mac Jones and that throw that he made, but Dak Prescott is doing some pretty otherworldly things at this point. He's having a pretty phenomenal season, and the emergence of CeeDee Lamb as a real number one has been just a game changer for this offense, I think. You know, they were in a lot of disadvantageous situations at the end of the fourth quarter and in overtime, and they're converting chunk plays, like really big, long chunk plays, you know, to get that ball closer for Zerline so he can kick it. I think it was, what,
Third and 25 at their own 45 at that point. Yep.
And you get CeeDee Lamb in the middle of, you know, I mean, this is presumably still, regardless of how bad the roster is, Belichick's wheelhouse. He's going to have the right coverage dialed up there, and you're still beating that. And then you're obviously, you know, winning the game with CeeDee Lamb too. And I think that, you know, all this talk about who's going to end up being kind of the big wide receiver. We had 2 or 3 wide receiver classes in a row with all this promise and all this hype, but CeeDee Lamb is quietly just becoming arguably one of the best, if not the best, in that whole kind of, I don't know if you want to lump all those guys together for like the last 2 or 3 years, but really has been tremendous and coming on strong this year.
I do want to lump them together.
Let's do it.
And I agree with that sentiment. I love AJ Brown, but I think CD might be gaining ground quickly here.
Well, what about
Metcalf,
the rookies?
Has his charms. The rookie Jamar Chase is very good. It's too early for Jamar Chase, though.
Right,
I think he's
fair.
I think he's going to be in that conversation by I don't know. Let's put a completely arbitrary date on it. I think by Memorial Day weekend, I think we'll be able to put him in this class.
June 1st.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, that is an excellent win for the Cowboys, who sit at 5-1, and just there's so much separation between them and the rest of the NFC East, which is, I don't know, I mean, it was within the realm of possibility, but after last season, it was kind of like, we're not quite sure about this team. Well, it seems like we're pretty sure about it at this point. This is a team that's going to be among the contenders in the NFC.
But did they solve the fundamental issues that caused the coaching change in the first place, right? Like, they were very talented under Jason Garrett, but they would do weird things at the end of games that would close gaps and force games that were not supposed to be competitive to be competitive. They blew out the Giants last week, notwithstanding, but Mike McCarthy still seems pretty good at making games that should not be competitive somewhat competitive. And really, you should be running over it. This Patriots team. And so it's hard to give them too much credit. And I think that the mark that Dan Quinn has left on this team has been undeniable. This defense is much better, despite the fact that they haven't had that large of an infusion of talent. But I'm still like, the one thing that is holding me back from going all in on this team and falling in love with this team is the same thing that held me back when Jason Garrett was their head coach. Like, I still don't feel that that assurance that you have with the head coach going into a game like you might with, like, I don't know, John Harbaugh or, you know, Bill Belichick, you know, 2 years ago, or, you know, anything like that.
That's fair, except for the fact that I think I would have said the same thing about the coaching staff that won the Super Bowl last year, minus the defensive coach they have there.
True.
So That's the way it goes sometimes. And look, I think Mike McCarthy has had in-game management issues. I don't know. We'll see. It could, look, if it pops up in a January game, now you have a big problem. But it's kind of a wait and see type of thing. And I do think it's kind of thing. Same thing with Andy Reid. For years, you know, Andy Reid's clock management was this huge thing. And now it's not anymore because it just sort of works itself out. When you make a lot of mistakes, like, even if you're not actively trying to learn to do it better, you just learn to do it better because you're like, oh, right, I screwed it up when I did this. I should not do it that way again.
You're my editor. You should know that that's not necessarily true, right? Anyone who edits me on a regular basis knows that no matter how many times you tell me to stop doing certain things, it's just going to happen. My clock management issues are perpetual.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think. Love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going guard. And then on top of
that. Like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day. Whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade, at The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at homedepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See homedepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Cardinals Browns.
Boy, a rough day for Browns believers like myself. I jumped on Connor's bandwagon, and now they're 0-2 since I did. This was a game in which I'll throw out all the excuses early. They had neither of their starting tackles, so they had you're going up against J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones with two backups at offensive tackle. That's a huge problem. Baker Mayfield has a non-throwing shoulder injury. It did flare up at one point when he took a strip sack from J.J. Watt, but when it boils down to it, they hosted the Cardinals, and the Cardinals were just better than them. And I guess we'll start with kind of the Baker side of this conversation, and the fact that we're just still not quite there with this Browns offense, although maybe this was a day where we were not going to find out any real answers because they had some limitations with the offensive line.
Well, I think that statement alone speaks to your question, Gary, because this was a day when they couldn't run the ball like they have been running the ball. They were missing both of their tackles, as you mentioned. They went into the game without Nick Chubb, and Kareem Hunt got hurt during the game. So when the Browns offense doesn't have a strong run game, it loses its identity. And so then I think that does go back to the quarterback, right? So here was a day when they couldn't have that anchor of a strong ground game. So what is the quarterback not doing that doesn't allow them to succeed when they're missing that element of their offense?
That's a great point. And it was weird, right? We saw Freddie Kitchens era Baker today. And what that is like, you know, that first read isn't there, whatever isn't visible. And then it's like this instinct to float backwards and away, and to the point where it's disadvantageous, and then you still are convinced that you're going to be able to make a play. I think that is still like an element of his game. Like, I'm not saying it's Manzelian, but it's like it's pre-Manzelian or post-Manzelian, whatever you want to call it. But there is that element of that is still hard for him to shake. And what is interesting to me is like they almost abandon, and perhaps the injuries forced them to do so, but the beauty of this offense for so long was that everything was out on schedule. Like when his back foot hit on that third step, the ball was out. And Baker's accurate. So it was great. Everything was working out for the Browns because he was doing exactly what you needed him to do. But when you ask him to do what Freddie Kitchens asked him to do. Or, you know, the Browns were in empty sets and three wide, four wide pretty early in this game, even when they were down seven. If you're asking him to be that guy, I just don't think he's that guy, which is probably bad news for the pro extension crowd, as Jenny kind of alluded to it. But also, like, it's just not how you win football games with him, and has never really been how you win football games with him.
Yeah, and look, you think of the Browns, you think of the Titans, you think of these teams that they have to stay on schedule from a down-to-down standpoint. They have to stay on schedule as far as the game goes. They had a couple early turnovers, and all of a sudden they're down three possessions early in the second quarter, and anything you planned on doing kind of goes out the window at this point. The other thing I want to bring up with the Browns, and I promise we'll get to the Cardinals, who are 6-0 and deserve much more praise than we're probably going to give them in this segment. But when I was kind of a little bit down on the Browns, I was not bullish on the Browns, not as bullish as some, whether on this show or whether elsewhere in the world. So I was worried about the melding of that back seven. I like all the talent. It's just a lot of new faces. I think that stuff can sort of fall apart early on when you're sort of getting used to playing with a new group of guys. It didn't really matter early in the season because the front four had been so dominant that the three of us could have been on the back line for the Browns. They would have been fine. What ended up happening today, the Cardinals offensive line did a solid job. The Browns front four did not take over the game. And what you saw was just awful chaos on the back end for the Browns again and again. A lot of blown coverages, a lot of plays that ended with guys pointing at each other, gesturing in frustration to each other against the Cardinals system that really does not do that to you. They don't do... I mean, DeAndre Hopkins will make plays over you, but they're not going to, like, fool you, and you know, that's just not what they do. And the Browns were just a mess. And the first two Cardinals touchdowns came on a 3rd and 21, and the second one came on a 3rd and goal from the 13-yard line, in which they blitzed and basically forced a quick throw from Kyler. I put the screenshot up. DeAndre Hopkins catches it and is still gathering himself at the 10-yard line as three Browns close in on him. And the freeze frame is like, you have three Browns, like, surrounding him with, like, Rondale Moore, the only possible blocker out there, like 5'7" Rondale Moore. And DeAndre Hopkins scores a touchdown on that because all three guys just completely whiff on the tackle, and he goes in the end zone. And that's the kind of day it was. You had basically, Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins doing their thing, and this Browns defense, for the first time, kind of had to deal with that on the back end, and they did not deal with it very well at all.
Yeah, since I'm the keeper of receipts on the MMQB podcast, Gary, you did make that exact point about the front seven or in the preseason or before the season started, so I give you credit for that. It reminds me a little bit of one of my favorite all-time quotes, and it was on one of the Giants teams in between their Super Bowls, and they were struggling on defense and they couldn't figure out the safety position, and there were just all of these busted coverages in a game against the Eagles. Specifically, DeSean Jackson just kept making these wide open deep plays, and one of the safeties said afterward, "Yeah, I was playing my own coverage. Like, everyone else was in cover too, but I was playing my own coverage." So it did seem like there were some situations where somebody may have been playing their own coverage.
It would be nice if the Browns were as good at covering as Gary is at trying to have his cake and eat it too, right?
I know.
You can say that you're in on the Browns, but you can also bring up the point that you said you knew what was wrong with them all along, which I mean, this is classic cake having and eating too, you know, and so kudos to you. Yeah, this is worrisome for the crowd who picked the Browns to either make in or win the Super Bowl. And so I don't know exactly what the fix is. I mean, Kareem Hunt is now banged up as well. So, you know, without that functionality in the run game, you've turned into the Freddie Kitchens Browns, right? You've turned into Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham and these kind of long meandering routes that aren't really going to get home. And, and everybody's going to jump on the quick stuff because they know that Odell Beckham is still dangerous in space. And so you're sort of one-dimensional again. And I think that that's that's got to be as scary as anything for the Browns.
Yeah. I mean, this is a game they lost by 23, and that was including a Hail Mary touchdown at the end of the first half, which that usually gives you something of a boost, and instead they just sort of got it handed to them in the second half. As far as the Cardinals go, I mean, look, defensively, they continue to be excellent. They had two strip sacks of Baker Mayfield. They took advantage of a couple off-target throws from Mayfield, ended up getting four takeaways in this one. And really, they were just harassing Baker the entire game and sort of forcing some of these bad plays here, even if the Browns were not playing well offensively. And then offensively, again, it's just Kyler Murray is just creating things at another level. And I'm not, again, I keep on saying, I don't know if it's sustainable to keep on saying, well, we'll get into third and 12 plus and just keep on converting, but they kind of keep doing it.
Yeah. The Cardinals defense has been getting better each week, it seems, which bodes well for them that, you know, they have this other unit in addition to the playmaking offense, right? That's bolstering their success. And as for the success on offense, I was impressed that they did it with Cliff Kingsbury out. You know, they had a new play calling situation last minute, right? You don't have a lot of time to prepare for that. You know, the head coach was out with per COVID protocols. That's a difficult situation to go on the road against a team that is a good team. They didn't look like it a lot today, but they're a good team. And to still have that kind of success, I think was pretty impressive.
Chargers Ravens.
I think the most impressive performance of the day falls to the Baltimore Ravens, who I don't even know how to sum this up properly. I'm a big believer in, like, if you play on a short week and come off like a physical overtime game, that means big trouble for the next week. So I really thought they were going to have their hands full with the Chargers, who are obviously playing really good football this season. And I mean, my goodness, the Ravens just completely outclassed them today. This was as impressive a win in a game between two quality teams I think we've seen this year.
Hard game for the Staley stands over here. You know, another club that I'm in that I regret being in, at least at this moment right now. And I think that it'll be fun to be in this club again next week and the week after that, just like it'll be fun to be in the Browns club once they start playing some bad teams. But I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe, you know, the Ravens are literally just rolling out this platoon of, you know, castaway veteran tailbacks, and they're gutting the Chargers, a really good defense. And the way that they this was a Patrick Ricard game, which is always fun. But the way that they utilized him as a blocker to just clear things out today was second to none. Rashad Bateman got in a little bit and got into the mix, the first round pick. Mark Andrews continues to just be a force for this team. And as undermanned as they are right now, Baltimore is first place in the AFC North and just shows no signs of slowing down. And it's just phenomenal to me that every little thing that we've always said that Lamar Jackson can't continue to do every week, he does and gets even better at it. You know, I mean, I was just thinking today, like, the sidearm pass was like this cause for alarm 3 years ago when he was doing this. And now, like, he's literally like hooking it around the helmets of like defenders, like a free kick in soccer. And it's like incredible. And he's just doing it on third down, just to convert a third down for you know what's and giggles. It's tremendous. I mean, I think he's building a platform for an MVP candidate season again.
Yeah, it was really amazing to me, Connor, just how the offense from week to week is different. And I think this complexity of the offense has been what has elevated them in 2021. And I think also to your point about the run game, 187 yards from a trio of running backs that were like in their prime in like, I don't know, 2015, 2014. Like, this is really remarkable. Like, they lost their entire running back depth chart essentially in training camp. And they're just rolling on as if that doesn't matter, which, you know, I think is part of the point of pride for John Harbaugh in continuing on the now snapped streak of 100-yard rushing games. was snapped last week. But here they come back again with 187. I hope I'm quoting that exact number right, because I've said it now twice. But it has been remarkable to me how they've continued to find ways to win, whether that be new aspects of Lamar Jackson's game or players who didn't expect to be in the league this year or whatever the case may be. The Ravens are just figuring it out.
Touchdowns for Le'Veon Bell, Devontae Freeman, and Latavius Murray. That was definitely someone's first, second, and fifth round fantasy picks in 2015.
Are you sure yeah. Jamal Charles didn't get in there somewhere along the line?
Also, I just realized that I accidentally made a figure it out pun, and that was not intentional at all. I said the Ravens are just figuring it out, which is, you know, kind of funny because this was the year defenses were supposed to figure Lamar out.
They yeah. are. They're all, every time they play the Ravens, the Lamar does something, and then after the play, every defensive coach is like, I knew he was going to do that. And that's figuring it out. As far as the Chargers go, I mean, you pretty much just throw this game out at this point. This was clearly their worst performance. The most alarming thing to me was another missed point after touchdown. And on the same day on which Michael Badgley is just money down in Houston kicking for the Colts. So, you know, a lot of things to think about. And by the way, Badgley was in Indianapolis, not in Houston. Even tougher venue to kick in, which is not true, but I'm going to throw it out there.
Yeah, it's a tough day. I mean, like I've said in this podcast, one of my favorite things to do on Mondays, really gets my week started the right way, is to listen to Brandon Staley's post-game speeches. You know, they get me fired up. They make me feel like I'm part of the team, and I will not get that this week. And so that's something that the Ravens and John Harbaugh have robbed me of. But to his credit, though, I will say that it was kind of cool that he was going for it on fourth on his own 19 in this game. Like, if you're going to go down, like, really, like, go down, you know, and die with the fact that, you know, because he said this is every time I go for it on fourth and one, it has nothing to do with the analytics. It has everything to do with my faith in you guys as an offense. And, like, if you're going to go down, you have to go down that way. And I do appreciate the fact that, like, when he's losing these games, he does not pack up the wagon, like, a la Jason Garrett in like 2017 and just be like, well, there's no chance and go home. You know, there is an aggressiveness there. There is like a constant effort. And I still do think he maintains a spot on my pedestal of most exciting young coaches.
No, definitely, Connor. And I'm glad you brought up the fourth and one decision because I was going to talk about that as well. This was the first time that his aggressiveness did not pay off, but you can still celebrate the decision, which you have. It came at a point in the game when they really needed points. I agree with you that I think it's great he has confidence in his offense. He's basically saying there's almost no way I can give Justin Herbert four chances to gain 10 yards and he won't be able to do it. Now, in this case, it didn't work and it looked like a bad decision. It was certainly way outside the norm of anything we generally see in the NFL. So he's definitely shaking things up. But ultimately, that was not what decided the game. I mean, the offense got off to a slow start, and as we referenced, the run defense just couldn't hold up.
What a wonderful day this would have been to be like a newspaper columnist in Los Angeles in like 1995, you know, and just tee off on analytics like after he goes for it on fourth and one like that. Like if you were a crotchety old columnist, you know, with like your crappy laptop at the stadium, like that would have been the best thing that's happened to you in years, you know, and you would just fly through a column like that, you know. So I think about those people on days like that. It's, you know, good for them.
If they hop in the car and write it while you drive, that's how you do it back in 95.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for
or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card.
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet,
there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't Nick?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day. Whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade, at The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97, for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at homedepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See homedepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Seahawks Steelers.
So the Sunday night game had a real, I don't know, like a 1991 type of throwback feel, like a lot of physical running and stuff like that. But when it was all said and done, it was essentially just T.J. Watt decided he was going to win the game.
Well, maybe that's a throwback feel in itself, right? No. You know, another great Steelers defender. But yeah, T.J. Watt really took over the game in overtime. He had the sack that ended the Seahawks' first possession, and then he made the forced fumble that ultimately decided the game. We wrote about this last year, and we talked to TJ Watt about how he has such a knack for forcing the ball out. Of course, immediately after he wrote about the story, his numbers dipped a little bit in 2020, but they are back on the rise in 2021. And I mean, he practices this, he studies this. And TJ Watt used to play offense, so he said that informed his understanding of how ball carriers carry the ball, when they might be most vulnerable, what angles are best to swipe at it. I mean, a lot of it's random and you're just kind of, you know, trying to get a hand in there, but he does practice this. And I remember that the defensive line coach Carl Dunbar said last year that the running backs will get annoyed with him in practice because he tries this on them and sometimes he finds some other balls. So, you know, this is clearly a something that he works at and has done a very good job at. And it showed up in a big moment when the Steelers really needed it.
Yeah, I mean, ruined the been waiting 2 weeks now for the Geno Smith redemption train to come into the station. Thought maybe last week when he supplanted Russell Wilson in that game that we would have seen some sort of Geno Smith moment. This time, unfortunately, again, it was robbed of that. I'm just waiting for him to have a moment. Like, I think he deserves like a moment, you know. You get drafted by the Jets and then you kind of just start this little wayward career after some of the unfortunate things that happened to him, and we don't have to get into all of them, but you know, I was looking forward to him having a little moment. That's all.
I don't want to speak for you guys on this, but I would personally like to see this be a pro Geno Smith podcast. I think Geno never got a fair shake, and I'm just surprised he never landed in that spot where it was like, you know, like the bridge guy type of role. Like, you know, a Tyrod Taylor type of a thing, or a Ryan Fitzpatrick type of thing, just for a year. Maybe it would go horribly, and then it's done. But he had those 2 years with the Jets, and then that was it. And this will be probably his first opportunity since his second year in the league to actually have a string of starts here, and he was fine in this. I mean, you're not going to ask too much of your quarterback, especially a guy who's your second string quarterback, in a game in Pittsburgh against that pass rush, against Keith Butler's looks. But yeah, I mean, you know, he was fine in this game. It was a bummer that it ended the way that it did.
Yeah, I mean, they fell into an early hole in the first half, and he clawed them out of the hole. You know, a lot of players have fallen victim to a great defensive player like TJ Watt, and I think Geno's performance was really strong all night. It just had a bad ending.
Some smart play design, too, there. Like, they had a lot of the throws where they would run RPO plays, but then have him not throw to the RPO wide receiver. So he had some kind of open looks on the outside, and they were moving the ball a little bit. But, yeah, it was fun. And I second the motion. If you're bringing the motion to the floor, I second the motion for a pro Geno, pro Danny Dimes. Well, we're going to have to bring a new motion because it's a new podcast. But Jenny and I came from a pro Danny Dimes podcast. And so, you know, maybe we'll get that all that stuff worked out in another pre-show meeting.
We do. We have to formalize the list. We have to go through the proper vetting process for everyone. But I think I like the direction this is going. And I think Geno Smith will like the direction it's going in as far as his pending approval by this podcast.
I spent, when I worked for the NFL, for like 2 weeks, 1 week, I just didn't want to use Twitter anymore. And so all I did was retweet Geno Smith for like 2 weeks to see if anyone would notice instead of adding anything to the conversation. And it was a great 2 weeks. He's got some good tweets. So,
did anyone notice?
No.
Twitter accounts, overrated.
Mm-hmm.
Raiders Broncos.
Well, all right, guys. Rich Bisaccia cannot be beaten as a head coach here. The Raiders go into Denver and really dominate the Broncos in this one. And I think it's always kind of interesting. We usually see it late in the season with interim head coaches and see how the team reacts and stuff like that. And this was such a such an unprecedented situation that unfolded with John Gruden resigning in light of his racist, anti-LGBTQ and misogynistic emails that came to light. But the Raiders players certainly responded to whatever Rich Bisaccia had to say to them, and they are back on track at 4-2 here.
Yeah, this was really interesting, Gary, because I had picked against the Raiders in this game, even though I think they're a better team than the Broncos, because I thought maybe the emotional toll of this week, recognizing that the person who's led your team over the last few years had engaged in this kind of hate speech. But what we saw today was almost like, maybe it's a leap too far and I'm certainly projecting, but it was almost like a measure of saying, rejecting what Gruden did. Like, yeah. Hey, listen, we're good on our own. Like, it was almost a statement against him, right? Like, we can win a game in a big way, and perhaps the frustrations that players on the team felt, including Carl Nassib, who took a day to collect himself. He's openly gay, and of course, Gruden's comments were anti-LGBTQ. So I think there could be a lot of players in the locker room rallying around the, you know what, this was a a person who did a lot of bad things who was leading us, and now we're on our own, and this is our own ship, and we're going to take it in our own direction. Again, that is maybe a leap too far, and it's certainly extrapolating, but it's hard not to look at that performance and what transpired last week and not wonder how that played a role.
It's not, you make a fantastic point. It's like the game after when a team fires a coach in the middle of the season, like for performance reasons. And it's like the game after that, like when the Browns fired Hugh Jackson and Greg Williams took over with Freddie Kitchens as a play caller. And I think they put up like a ton of points, and you're more aggressive. You come out with more fire. Like, it's almost like a weight has been lifted off your shoulders. And this is interesting because, you know, Jay Glazer reported on the Fox Morning Show that there were players that did go to Gruden's house to visit him and to say that they were going to miss him. But I don't think the other story, part of that story, is necessarily addressed in the fact that, like, to Jenny's point, I think there were probably a lot of players that were glad that he was gone. And, you know, I did a story when Gruden was hired in then Oakland, talking to some of the players in Tampa Bay that he had, and that was their biggest complaint about him. Is like, yeah, there were some guys that loved John Gruden, but there were a lot of people who didn't. And there were a lot of people who thought he was, you know, I don't know, whether like the quote was two-faced, right? That he would say one thing to you and then do something else. And I think the emails certainly bear that out, that you insist that you're not this kind of person, but decades worth of correspondence, you know, almost a decade's worth of correspondence proves otherwise. And so I think it's just, it's interesting. Like, I think that from the Gruden perspective, this could be an uplift. The other thing that Rich Bisaccia did was he cried at his opening press conference, which is a great move for a new head coach. And I think that fires people up too. So that was a solid maneuver. And I think that goes a long way towards winning the game. You got to get emotional at your opening press conference. I think that's what you got to do.
It was a busy week for crying coaches here. Worked out for one of them, not so much for another one. I don't know. But yeah, as far as this game went, look, it was not a game where it was like, oh yeah, they got some breaks, got some bounces. And I mean, look, this defense, I'm not sure what Gus Bradley is doing there. I don't know how he was sort of able to unleash what had been a completely non-existent pass rush. But I mean, they were swarming Teddy Bridgewater in this one. It's just it's a different feel for this team up front. Maybe it's the addition of a Yannick Ngakoue. Maybe it's the emergence of Max Crosby as just sort of a possible star here. But they dominated this game defensively. They got a handful of big plays offensively, big throws from Derek Carr to sort of pull away in this one. And it was never really in doubt.
Chiefs, Washington.
So I want to throw it to Connor right now, because I want you to set up a correct prediction that I made off air, and then I get to continue to cherry pick what I say. This was more exact than my prediction that the Browns would go anywhere from 3-14 to the first of four consecutive Super Bowl championships.
See, a peek behind the curtain here at the MMQB, but during the Sunday, I will write, a couple times off of some meaningful games in the afternoon slates before we start taping the podcast, and so I'll annoy Gary and Mitch, our other NFL editor, on ideas that I might be going to. And when the Chiefs were down 13-10, I was like, you know, this is probably a big deal if this happens. And so we started talking about some Chiefs ideas, and then Gary said, but all this is null and void when a Jack Del Rio defense inevitably gives up like three straight touchdowns. And within 5 minutes of that text sending, like, this, the game was a complete blowout, and Washington was out of it. So kudos to Gary for the second week in a row, actually, nixing a very easy sort of a tap in column. So bad job by you all.
That's all I ask for, is just constant praise on this podcast. So it's nice to get it every once in a while. Yeah, it was. Look, this was
just a really interesting day for the Chiefs, and I feel like I want to write something in January where it's kind of like, boy, remember that win over Washington? That ended up being like the microcosm of their season because they started so slow and were so sloppy, but then it was like, okay, they just have too much talent and end up just taking over. It was a really... I guess the question is always, how alarming are sloppy turnovers? Because you would... I think just sort of step back and say, like, well, look at all this talent. They still have guys who can get open. They still have plays that work. It's not like a team that just isn't good enough. But, I mean, the caliber of turnovers they're having are kind of spectacular at this point in a, I mean, I don't know. Like I texted this to Connor, that Patrick Mahomes flubbed snap and then he tried to sort of toss it, ended up throwing straight up in the air and ended up being like the easiest interception that any defensive back has ever gotten. If that had happened in like his first start or something like that, or like in his first season, people would have been like, oh, this Patrick Mahomes way too reckless, got to get the Alex Smith back there in the lineup for the Chiefs.
Yeah, and there have been a lot of those for the Chiefs this year, which is really uncharacteristic. So I see your point, Gary. At what point are you like, at some point this is going to even out and there aren't going to make these kinds of mistakes over and over again? This is not what's going to tank the season. Or is it like some global problem and that they're all just practicing sloppy and these things are showing up on game day, which I don't believe that is true either. So I keep trying to think about this year's Chiefs in the context of all of the 2-2 Patriots teams that we used to see that would then become dominant and run away with things in their division. So not saying that the AFC West is going to be an easy division. It's actually the opposite. It's probably the toughest division in football right now. But I keep trying to put that into context that, like, at some point, the talent will prevail here, right?
It did in this one, and you'd think it would over the course of the season, because they did. They literally went on three consecutive touchdown drives in the second half to pull away and put this one away against what is just not a very good Washington team, and that probably warrants some discussion as well. Just the fact that, you know, we kind of said, well, you know, this team, even with Taylor Heinicke under center, you know, maybe this is a team that can win a lot of like 20-17 type games, because this defense, they're just going to dominate. They put so many resources into what they have up front, and it hasn't worked out that way. They haven't been great up front, and they've been horrible on the back end, just blown coverage after blown coverage. And I'm not really sure how you can possibly, figure out how that's happening with a defense this talented.
Feisty Tyrann Mathieu in this one, up and down the sideline, kind of charging at everybody after the Ricky Seals-Jones touchdown at the end of the half. Mm-hmm. And this could be one of those moments. I mean, we saw it with the Chiefs when Bob Sutton was their defensive coordinator too, where things just kind of come to a head and, you know, things seem okay, things seem, you know, moderate to good. And then all of a sudden they'll have games like this where, you know, the coverage is exposed in some way or shape or form. And Steve Spagnuolo is interesting because, you know, everyone that you kind of talk to about his defense is like, you know, kind of playing coverage in his defense is a lot like being in a fast break offense in basketball, where you kind of have to switch on the fly a lot. You have to do a lot of, you know, kind of aggressive defending that, you know, you're not necessarily going to know what happens before the snap. And so this is tough when things start going south in a defense like this. Sometimes you're already doing too much. You're already overworked. You're already angry and upset and confused. And this is a tough defense to play when, you know, your back's already against the wall. And so I think, you know, it's much easier when your offense is scoring 35 points a game and bailing you out, and the spotlight is not on you.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day. Whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade, at The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97, for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at homedepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See homedepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Packers Bears.
So listen, I don't have a ton on this game, except for the fact that Aaron Rodgers scored that touchdown to put the Packers up 10 with 4:30 to go, and then just started taunting the crowd with, "I still own you," was the quote. There was also some other things that were profane that we won't run down, but the message was, "I still own you," and he has won. I mean, I don't know if this is, it's expected when I looked it up, but it's still just sort of mind-blowing because, you know, these are division rivals, and they see each other, they should know each other, they should play close games. When you play a lot of close games, you know, sometimes a bounce or two goes the other way, and that's the way it goes. But he's won 10 of his last 11 trips to Soldier Field now, and I don't know what else to say about it. It's just, he's better than everything Chicago throws at him every time.
He said after the game that a woman was giving him two middle fingers. So he was, I guess, in a way talking directly to her, but to everybody when he said what he said. I just thought it was a hilarious thing to do. Like, I mean, granted, there's a double standard here where if Justin Fields did that and it was Lambeau Field, they'd kind of be like, what are you talking about? This is your first game here. But if he did something like that, I think everyone would be very upset and up in arms. And this is sort of a uniquely, I'm a 38-year-old quarterback who might not ever come back here and play again, so I can say whatever I want kind of way. And he did admit that before the game, when he was warming up, he did take into consideration the fact that this could be his last game at Soldier Field. And so I guess there was just like a lot of emotions there. But on the flip side, it wasn't necessarily like a super dominant performance. Like, the Packers have not been as dominant as we expected them to be. So it was sort of an odd time to pull the insult out. I mean, I guess if you're gonna do it, you have to do it whenever. Like, you know, it's like when you're Terrell Owens and you have the Sharpie in your pants, like, you just got to use it, you know, if the Sharpie's in your pants. But like, I don't know. I thought it was funny, but I also thought it was like, if you're everyone there, you're kind of like, man, you're not really beating us by that much. I don't really understand what's going on.
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of a speak it into existence type thing, right? I mean, not his record against the Bears, but just this idea of this dominant team that can taunt whoever they want. Well, not other players, but any other fan bases that they want, right?
I don't know. I think they weren't winning by that much type of argument. It sort of falls in the same category. There's that one, it's that episode of The Simpsons where they have the rivalry with Shelbyville. And one of the insults that one of the Shelbyville guys mutters under his breath is, maybe that's why we beat him in football nearly half the time. And it's just kind of like, he beat him again. They just keep on beating him every time they go there. I think that's just it. And I really think there's something to be said for, again, the Bears are not like, this is not like the Jets and the Patriots or maybe Jets aren't the best example since they went into Foxborough and won some games, as you guys would know, but this isn't like some bottom feeder team for a decade. I mean, the Bears have been to the playoffs a couple of times. Just every time Aaron Rodgers goes to Soldier Field, he wins. He's won 10 of 11. It just shouldn't happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
About it.
I guess what I was trying to say is, like, this is a time when he's at peak strength, right? When he's playing the Bears. Mm-hmm. So you want to sort of acknowledge and flaunt that peak strength, because maybe your team isn't at peak strength right now, right? I mean, they're good, obviously. Like, they've been on a roll and they are one of the best teams in the NFL, but they're not at peak strength. So let's try to channel this moment when you dominate the Bears and, you know, kind of recognize it and put it out there and give a clip that everyone can get kind of hyped about.
Reminds me of when you brought up the Simpsons quote, Gary. There was a kid that went to the same pool as me in grade school, and we used mm-hmm. to play Nuke'em against each other. Do you know what Nuke'em is? Are you familiar with Nuke'em?
Yes, but I don't remember.
Nuke'em is like volleyball, but you don't have to hit it. So you throw it over to the other side, and you have to have it bounce twice. And the other person has to just catch it for it. And I would always play this kid, and he would say the same thing after every game. He'd say, I beat you, and now I can tell anyone that I beat you by whatever score I want. And I said, no, like, you can't say that. You have to say that you beat me 10-9 because that was the score. And he said, no, when I win, I get to say whatever the score is that I want. And I actually,
what a bizarre child.
And I actually tweeted that once. Because it upset me so much. And someone instantly direct messaged me and said, was it this kid? And it was. And so he was a serial offender and also a child of Scranton political privilege. But that unbeknownst to anyone else. But so I would say that, like, it's kind of like that with Rodgers, where it's like, it doesn't matter what the score was. I got my moment out of it. I got my mojo. And now the Packers, like, that are going to go
now
off.
Now I'm feeling it.
Yeah, feeling it.
Yep.
And now he can tell people that he won that game 78-0.
That's right. Exactly. I love it. Perfect analogy.
That's going to stick with me, Connor. That really bothers me. On
I
your
think
behalf.
About it once a week, and it makes me curious. Yeah.
Vikings, Panthers.
All right, I want to open up this one. This is an overtime Vikings win down in Carolina, but I want to pay Kirk Cousins a compliment because he's earned it, and that's just what we do here. So this season, there have been six scenarios where Kirk Cousins had to drive for a game-tying or game-winning score with less than 2 minutes on the clock or in overtime, and he has accomplished that feat three times, although now two of those times he has put them within field goal range and Greg Joseph has missed a short field goal. So in a way, he's gone like 5 for 6 on these really difficult late game drives. And for a team that seems just completely content to, no matter what the scenario, end up playing a one possession game in the final minutes, that's a big deal. And look, you know, the debate rages on with Kirk Cousins. How good is he? Do they bring him back on another contract, whatever it might be? But he's delivering this year, even for a team that is maybe not delivering so much around him.
Yeah, and really just, you know, this was a season where they drafted Kellen Mond, and it seemed like he might have been slightly more than a whatever you want to call it, like an advanced backup, like someone that they might hope could actually take over at some point. But he continues to have these moments where it's almost like Prescott on Sunday against the Patriots, where you need X amount of yards and he's going to get it. And granted, he has arguably the best receiver tandem in the league, or one of the two or three best receiver tandems in the league. So you should say that in a good running game. So you should say that it should be possible. But we've seen other quarterbacks with the same skill set and the same talent, relatively speaking, that cannot get that 20 to 30 yards to get the team into field goal range. And he does this despite knowing the fact that regardless of what happens, the Vikings are going to miss the field goal at the end of the game and break his heart. And so I give Kirk Cousins a lot of credit. I think it's a phenomenal thing.
It's also one of those things where if the quarterback can do it under this circumstance, what do you need to do to replicate that in other aspects of the game? Particularly, should you be more aggressively calling things in other parts of the game? I mean, you know, you hear it a lot, and I think there is something about that situation at the end of the game. Hurry up, and the adrenaline's pumping, and you just kind of have to do it and not think as much. Or there are a number of factors that can result in a quarterback being able to make throws and gain yardage in that situation versus other situations in the game. But maybe they're being too conservative in play calling in other drives that are not this high pressure cooker situation.
I think there is something very, very acute about that observation right there. And this will transition nicely into our next game. But I do want to point out they had so they were protecting a lead. They were up 8. There were 3 minutes left. They were facing a 3rd and 8 at the Panthers 33. If they got a first down, the game was basically sealed. And they ran the ball. And I know Jason Garrett did not make a guest play call because he was over in East Rutherford at the time. I know that for sure. But it was so meek. Dalvin Cook lost 3 yards on the run, but it was just kind of like, oh my God, you could have just thrown for a first down and pick up the first down and ended the game. But they sort of did the run, then punt, and Sam Darnold, in his defense, ended up getting the long drive, the 2-point conversion, and this went to overtime instead. But yeah, maybe Kirk Cousins is, you know, worthy of having a little more on his plate at this point.
And to counter that, though, Gary, right, there was a 3rd and 4 where he threw that sort of sideline back shoulder, like he threw like almost a deep sideline shoulder back fade to Adam Thielen. And then they missed that subsequent field goal. And so maybe that was Mike Zimmer's way of saying, like, I give you one of those a game, and then you're never allowed to do it again if you don't pick up the first down. He seems like one of those, like, coaches that kind of has these, like, fun, hard and fast parent rules. Like, you get one, and then that's it.
Rams, Giants.
So the Rams won this game handily, and we've said a lot of nice things about the Rams over the course of the season, and I'm sure we'll continue to do so. But we're going to focus mostly on the Giants here. And look, you guys know the organization better than me, but what are we looking at right now? Because Daniel Jones, he was a little bit shaky in this one, but he has had an excellent season so far. I think you would be very bullish on his future based on what he's done in 2021, and yet this team is not good at football, and I'm not sure what exactly they plan on doing as a solution at this point.
It's a great question, right? And what can you do? My suggestion was it's a difficult ask, right? But it's to ask Dave Gettleman to do the selfless thing again. Dave Gettleman during the draft did one of the most selfless things we've ever seen an executive do, and that's trading back in the first round to get a future pick that you might not even be the acting general manager of to use. And so I think you need to ask him to trade some of these players at the deadline. Like, I think you're 1-5. Joe Judge, one of the players said afterwards that at halftime, Joe Judge told them all that their roster spots were not guaranteed. And so I'm not saying that he's intimating there's going to be some sort of trade deadline purge, but like, he's clearly lost this locker room to some degree. And so you have to assume that like, either you're going to blow this whole thing up or Joe Judge needs more help than he has now. And either way, you're going to need picks. And I don't know. I just don't see Jason Garrett unlocking Saquon Barkley. If he's healthy enough to get moved by the trade deadline, I would move him. Evan Ingram is a guy like Zach Ertz just went for a 5th-round pick. You'd probably move Evan Ingram at this point. You know, I don't know. I think you do something like that to shake things up a little bit.
Wow, there's really no better way to build morale for the second half than to tell players at halftime that you may lose your job. That's just a really interesting leadership style, which kind of brings me to what I was about to say is I think you have to look at the coaching staff. And unfortunately, the Giants have cycled through head coaches rapidly. And I don't get the sense that ownership wants to be a team that is now known for cycling through head coaches rapidly. But when Daniel Jones has done what you've asked and has put himself in a position to lead the team to what could be a better point, and yet that's not happening. And there's issues in all phases, right? A lot of that blame should go on to the coaching staff. And so what do you do? You know, do you look to make a change yet again? What are you doing differently in this hiring process that has failed you in the last few? I don't know the right answer, but the Giants keep trying to reclaim what they were in 2007 and 2011, and they're just not able to do it. So maybe it's trying to do things a totally different way.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say make Daniel Jones also the head coach. And I said, yes, Danny, yes, do things a different way. But I completely agree because we've seen this and it's so obvious and they deny it time in and time out. But, you know, everything seems to be an effort to sticking to the past. You know, the hire of Joe Judge was clearly played on the Giants fans' deep woven love of Tom Coughlin and Bill Parcells, that hard dude who's going to come in and be mean to everybody. And, you know, for some reason, Giants fans just love that. They love that aesthetic. They love that feel, but it doesn't work anymore. It really, like I was talking to someone about this recently. If Joe Judge fails, he's the last tough guy head coach I think that's ever hired in the NFL. Like cyclically, everything comes around. And so 30 years from now, like it'll be a fun thing again. And everyone said, what about Dan Campbell? I mean, Dan Campbell's like crying at the podium. Like he's a tough guy by virtue, but is not afraid to, you know, be honest and open and, you know, kind of share his feelings on everything. Joe Judge, I think, is the last tough guy that is ever going to be hired. And if this fails spectacularly, which it looks like it's on its way to doing, I think it has to force the Giants to rethink their process. And now you could argue that they almost did. They didn't want to go all the way down the aisle with Matt Rhule, but they were close to doing that. And maybe this is a lesson for them to stop, you know, kind of existing in their comfort zone.
Bengals, Lions.
All right, we're going to open up the lightning-ish round here at this point. And I just want to point out to Bengals fans, your team does not belong in the lightning round, but you just happen to play a non-competitive game against an inferior opponent. And on the other side, I just want to point out, like, the Bengals are not in this class anymore. I think, you know, we used to sort of reflexively put the Bengals in that bottom third, maybe bottom five of teams in the league. They're not there anymore. They're beating those teams now, and they're sitting at 4-2, and people are going to say, well, they haven't really beaten anyone, but for, you know, good teams, teams that are sitting at 4-2, they beat bad teams. And that's, you know, the Bengals are no longer a bad team. They're one of the good teams. That's my take on the Bengals.
Another masterful job of Gary having his cake and eating it too, saying the Bengals don't belong in this section of the podcast, but you wrote the outline. You put them in this section of the podcast. Move them up, Gary.
I mean, Bengals fans are still mad at me for my too low power ranking a few weeks ago. So
I picked them to win 3 games. I've been reminded of that several times already. But I do have to say that this has to be, if you're Zach Taylor and if you're Duke Tobin, you know, they will always say that they don't read the press or whatever it is. And every coach says that, but you know it's not true. And you know that they get angry about all these little things. But this has to be one of the most satisfying starts to a season. Like, you know, you get crushed for drafting Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell. I did a lot of the crushing there. And, you know, Sewell turns out to be middling so far as a player, but, you know, could end up developing. Ja'Marr Chase is like the most exciting rookie receiver we've seen since Odell Beckham. Everyone says Ja'Marr Chase can't catch in training camp and it's all over. And he's just phenomenal. And everyone says they're going to be in last place and they're just playing really well. So I think this is totally satisfying. Kudos, Bengals. Have your moment in the very bottom section of this podcast.
And a quick note on the Lions before we move on. Strong words from Dan Campbell about Jared Goff. And you could tell he looked down. There was a long pause, several seconds, and he thought about it. And then he decided to go there. He said, it's too early to totally evaluate him. But then the long pause came and he said, but we need him to do more. He needs to shoulder more of the burden of this team. He needs to do more to get us to try to win a game. And I like that he was honest. It was very refreshing.
Dan Campbell is winning press conferences at an alarming rate. And you're right. The theatrical pause was just chef's kiss. Beautiful.
Dolphins, Jaguars.
All right. We go out to London, another real gem for our friends overseas there. Trevor Lawrence he played in this one, and that went really well. And the Jaguars get on the board here, first win for Trevor Lawrence and a lot of Jaguars players, and Urban Meyer also was a part of this, at least nominally. The one thing that's kind of wild here for the Jaguars is, I didn't realize this, I'm sure this stat got thrown around a ton and I just didn't know it, but they had not kicked a field goal this season before this game, which is just insane to me. And then they ended up, Matthew Wright, this sort of street free agent kicker, comes in and goes 3 for 3, including 250 plus in the final minutes, including the 53 yarder as time expired to win it. So exciting times here for the Jaguars.
I mean, it was a really entertaining game, Gary, so it wasn't the worst product for our friends in London. But yeah, I thought it was illuminating. NFL Network showed the in-camera locker room, and everyone rallied around when one of the players gave Trevor Lawrence his game ball for his first win of many. And then Urban Meyer spoke, and you could just see the energy in the room lag. It was, I don't know. It seemed notable.
You're right, because there wasn't, like, we've seen a lot of, I was thinking of when the Jets won 2 weeks ago and watching Robert Saleh on the sideline, right? Like, he grabbed his security guard and hugged him and lifted him up, and everybody's, you know, around him and freaking out. And Urban Meyer, like, he bent his complete, like, top half of his body forward like he had injured himself in a game of pickup basketball, and then just, like, trudged to the middle of the field. And, like, it wasn't like, let's tussle the old ball coach's hair. It was like, all right, you know, you're gonna be here. And so I guess congratulations to you too.
Yeah,
he,
sh-
he should have embraced his new shtick, and he should have a red challenge flag to celebrate every good thing that happens here.
He should have left. He should and should have taken a different flight home.
Oh man, Connor. Oh man. A lot to read into there. As for the Dolphins, they have a bye week and they have a lot to think about. It's been really a disappointing start for a team that people thought was maybe ready to take the next step.
And oddly, though, the weird thing about this Dolphins team in this game for the Dolphins in particular was probably the best Tua Tagovailoa has looked in a long time, right? He had one really bad interception, but they were able to pull off, perhaps because it was the Jaguars and, you know, they're running this like pseudo NFL scheme. They were able to pull off a lot of the RPOs, a lot of the crossers, a lot of the stuff that Tua can hit with regularity and has always hit with regularity out of Alabama. And you saw him get comfortable. You know, he had the full velocity on some of his balls. And so, I mean, he looked good for large sections of this game. And so it's like, okay, what does this mean? Is this just a flash in the pan thing? Is he going to build over the next few weeks and at least show the Dolphins fans that there is still like a flicker left in this rebuild? Or is this just because it was the Jaguars? The Jaguars are not the Jaguars should be to, for our London friends, relegated, but they won't be. And, you know, this was just a bad team that they're playing against.
Interesting, Connor. I had a little bit of a different read on Tua. I thought there were chances in where I wanted him to do more, and I wanted him to put the game away and sustain the drives or not settle for the field goal or whatever the case may be. Certainly, there were some coaching decisions that were strange, you know, taking a shotgun snap on 4th and 2 and, you know, it did. And also he's coming back from his rib injury. So you don't want to make too many judgments off of his first game back. But I think all of the skepticism about Tua is still there. At least I don't think he's done anything to extinguish it at this point.
It was a very quarterback-friendly game here. A lot of throwing in traditional run down and distance situations. Along with the RPO stuff, a lot of play action that involved deep drops, which I think they need to do more with him. But especially with the Jaguars team that just can't rush the passer, it kind of turns it into like 7-on-7 football as much as you can get in the NFL. And these throws, you know, the ones that are going to the right place, they're sort of, he's in wide open spaces. They're throws that every NFL quarterback should be making. Yeah, that's true. And I mean, you know, I don't want to take it away from him, but the thing that will, I mean, look, I think it's something he can't overcome. Not only pressure, but even just a threat of pressure, even just a blitzer that he's seeing out of the corner out of his eye, it just all falls apart. It's completely erratic. It's just total meltdown. I mean, he had, along with the interception, he had another throw where he was like escaping left, and he had two receivers just sort of wide open right in front of him, and he just sort of airmailed it. And it's just a bizarre, again, I don't want to dig down too deep on one throw, because then you end up coming to like Josh Allen 2018 type of conclusions about a guy early in his career, but it's still just the same problem. And I also wanted to take this opportunity to point out that Jacoby Brissett actually had the most impressive throw of the game, which is on a 4th and short play action in which he took a hit. He took a hit, threw it opposite hash. It was very impressive.
Yeah. So take this to a diatribe that Gary went on with a grain of salt. He just wrote that Jacoby Brissett is no longer the starter of the Dolphins. So you got to deal with it. But it's interesting, right? When you do a big rebuild like this and a teardown, and you have all the equity in the cap space, someone's got to pay for this. And they're coming in on a bye week. And, you know, obviously, I don't think they're going to do anything rash like make a coaching change. I don't think that they should get rid of Brian Flores. I think he's done a great job. He won 10 games after overcoaching that team in that first kind of teardown tanking year. But they're going to have to do something. And whether that's cutting bait with the quarterback, you know, giving him a few more weeks, you know, start talking about a new general manager. I don't know what the thing is that they have to do, but you have to do something. I mean, ask the Browns, ask Hugh Jackson. Like, you don't get to wait this long post rebuild to make the playoffs.
Texans Colts.
All right, last one of the day here. And look, the Texans control the clock in this one. More than 34 minutes of possession. So things went well for them. Things didn't go well for them. this is exactly what we thought the Texans would be this year, where we've seen them, they beat the Jaguars. We saw them be very competitive with the Patriots last week, and this was a game where it just looked like a Colts team, which I think is much better than their record would indicate. I think beef is real, and I think we are going to see the Colts right in it at the end of the season. But this just had a feel of a professional team versus like a semi-professional team.
Another good game for Jonathan Taylor, certainly. And, it does seem like in some respects that, Carson Wentz, I'm not ever going to say that a game where you're 11 of 20 for 223 yards is any sort of statement in any way, shape or form, but, he is hitting on some of his deep balls. I think he was 2 for 3 on shots of 20 yards or more. He was pretty good in the middle of the field as well. And so, I don't know. He's not quite there yet. He's not the guy that you would say, oh, it was totally worth trading this first round pick for. But he's getting them there. And I don't know. The Colts are slowly turning this thing around. I think they're going to be right there. Nobody's running away with this division yet.
My take is that Gary did a good job ordering the outline, putting this game last. Not a ton of analysis to offer on this one.
What do you think about this, Bengals fans, that you're in? This is where he thinks that you should be, right?
Hang on. Hang on 1 second. I put them in the same section as Jacoby Brissett, highlight throw in London. Probably the number one takeaway for UK fans from this game. And also, look, this game might have been close, but Michael Badgley converts a PAT in the first quarter, adds a 41-yard field goal. Michael Badgley did go 4 for 4 on PATs and made his only field goal attempt of this game. I'm just saying, the Chargers, they could use him.
Interesting. Real X factor there.
It was. The real X factor in the Colts' 31-3 victory over the non-competitive Texans. The MMQB NFL podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royson. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Thanks, as always, to senior podcast producer Dan Bloom for the most wonderful notes anyone in the industry could possibly get. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, and Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review, because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way.
It's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.